Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter. I am also a commodities broker with StoneX, where we work with farmers and end users in the futures and options markets, also OTC and structured products. And I also work with producers and consumers on cash consulting side of it too. So if you're a client here and like what you hear and you want to get involved in something or you need to make adjustments, you can call me anytime, text or email. My phone number is 312-706-7610. Email is craig.turner@stonex.com. If you're not a client, feel free to give us a call and get an idea of what it's like to work with us. If you like the podcast, please go to iTunes, give us a positive review. If you want to check out my newsletter, Turner's Take, just go to turnerstake.com. So let's get into it here. Macro news first. Inflation is still very much in the news. Looks like the stock market is still somewhat in a bull market. We are also seeing, I think, the consumer price index. We saw CPI, the January report, which is for December, hit 7%. You know, that is about as high as it's been year over year in the past 40 years. So that's going to lead to the Fed raising rates and tapering in 2022. We're talking about 4 interest rate cuts. And we're seeing the Treasury market and interest rates already starting to feel the impact of that, whether it be expirations or real inflationary pressures coming into the market. There's a real expectation for higher interest rates. What is interesting is the European Union said they're not going to be as aggressive as raising interest rates. They don't think they have to. They think that their inflation numbers, which they say are from mostly energy and bottlenecks in the supply chain, will eventually come in as the year goes on, and that's the only inflation they're seeing. So European Union is saying that everything is therefore transitory, while the Federal Reserve is basically, you know, which said it was transitory at first, is now admitting that some of it is structural. I'm sure there's both going on, which we'll talk a little bit more on that. But it does make an interesting case then for the dollar. So I went back and I'll post these in the show notes in the newsletter at the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar, you know, when it was, you know, let's say back in 2012, 13, and 14, the dollar index was about in the high 70s, low 80s. What happened in 2014 and 2015, the Fed got aggressive with monetary policy. The European Union did not. And we went from trading, you know, in the high 70s to low 80s in the dollar index to the 90s for pretty much the better part of 2015 through really till now. And it was, you know, high, you know, basically from the high 80s to maybe low 100s in the US dollar index. And, you know, that also made a lot of the foreign currencies come down, or the Canadian dollar came down in that time. So the British pound, yen got weaker to the United States. The euro definitely got weaker to the US dollar. And here we are, beginning of 2022, and the market's thinking, well, what if the United States gets aggressive again, like it did in 14 through 15, and the European Union, you know, isn't. Now, back then, the European Union, the central bank, actually got even more dovish and did more quantitative easing while the United States was tapering and trying to raise rates. What will it look like this year? You know, this time, I don't think it'll be as a drastic as move as we saw in basically the reason why the dollar was that weak back in 12 and 13 was the after effects of all the quantitative easing from the subprime crisis, which was really a bit, I mean, it was a real estate issue around the world, but it was really centered in the United States. So now, you know, do we go make a next leg higher and we now start trading in the dollar, you know, 100 to 110, go all the way back up to 120. I don't think we go all that high, but there is a very good case to be made that the dollar gets much stronger over the next year or two, especially if other major currencies out there, namely the euro, doesn't follow suit or isn't as aggressive as the Fed. So remains to be seen, but I do think that is going to be an interesting transition here as we go forward. You can make the case the dollar may have run a little bit ahead of itself, but over the long term, you would think there'd be some appreciation, which would maybe have an effect on exports in the United States if the world wasn't pretty much in tight stocks and everything, which we're gonna go through here. So I'm gonna just touch on oil before we get into the grain markets and energies. Crude oil hit another 7-year high today. You're trading like $85, $86 in the front months. We backed off from the highs a little bit, but we are breaking out here on the charts. We're well above the major averages, and you take a look at the technical indicators, and we're not all overbought. We're in a bullish uptrend. We're not overbought. We're still above the 20-day moving average. We're breaking through some very old resistance lines, and not just on the daily chart, but you look through the weekly and the monthly chart, go back 7 years, and now we're breaking out over some very key resistance levels. So that is bullish for crude. We'll see how OPEC responds to that. But you got to figure two things here. The energy hit we took last year on demand because of the shutdowns and COVID isn't nearly as bad as it is this year. So this new variant seems like it isn't impacting things as much. We're not going into hard shutdowns all over North America and Europe, though some countries are, but the United States really didn't. There were mask mandates, but it wasn't, in some of the major cities, I know Chicago has gone into some shutdowns and New York, but for the most part, a lot more is open for business than it was last year. And we're coming out of it earlier. And I think a lot of the refineries thought that we might have a repeat of last year, so they didn't buy as much crude. And now they got to have basically a makeup session here because, the products are, they're not going to have the supply that they need, on the refined side. So it is very interesting. It's probably only going to get stronger. I don't see why crude oil and energy would go down in the spring and summer driving months if we're going to be this high, unless we see a lot more production. There's really nothing that Russia and OPEC have said that leads you to believe that they're going to put a lot more supply on the market. And there's nothing, that we aren't expanding supply here in the United States with drilling and energy exploration. A lot of the energy policy has been based on renewables. So it seems like crude energy will be strong for a while. Natural gas has lagged behind, and it's just been warmer. We've had a very warm winter here. If it was a very cold winter, it would be another story. But supply has been able to catch up with demand, and a lot of that had to do with the industry being able to recover and create more supply on one end, and then the other end kind of catching a break that the temperatures have relatively been mild. So that's where we are on the energy side. I still like crude. I think the July and December contracts look interesting. I think that you can still buy call spreads and sell put spreads. And, if we're this high right now in crude this summer, in January, mid to late January, where are we going to be in May, June, and July? So I do like having some kind of option play, limited risk, with upside exposure in options. If you have any questions about how to do that or get involved, let me know. We can find some. I already have some ideas, but we can find something for your account. And we can just go from there, have kind of a summer play and also a year-end play, because I think the energy story is going to be around for a while. The WASD was last week. We went over it a bit. I dove more into it because I wanted to take a look at supply and demand tables, not just what the WASD meant for old crop, but if we start now plugging in acres, what can we expect balance sheets to look like next year? Then I also wanted to look at what the major exporter carryouts were for corn, wheat, and soybeans, because that has a lot to do with with prices too, especially when, you know, when you are tight in your own country, you know, there's only, you know, prices will run up so far. But if you're also tight globally on the global export market, then price rationing can look a lot different. And quite honestly, when the domestic markets and the global exporting, the global exporters are tight, that's how you get recipes for some big volatility and some prices that you may not have thought could happen. So let's dive into it. I'm going to go with corn first. You know, we take a look at corn, 93.4 million acres on new crop, I'm sorry, on old crop, and then they didn't change a ton of numbers. But when you take a look at the ending stocks from the USDA, 1.5 billion doesn't look too threatening. But when you take a look at the losses that we're estimating out of South America, the export demand that could come in, the fact that China might be buying corn and soybeans from the United States as part of phase one as a way to negotiate, probably favorable in their direction for phase two. And the strength of ethanol and energy prices here, the 1.5 billion ending stocks for old crop corn seems high. Conservatively, I think you can lop off 200. If you want to get aggressive, you can take off 300 million bushels. And I think you're going to be more in tune with where the market is and where the market's trading corn right now, which is why we're at six. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of private analysts and firms out there and money funds think the corn ending stocks are about 1.2 to 1.3 billion instead of this 1.5 number. What makes that very interesting is, and I'll include this table in my newsletter, if you start to take a 2022-23 year with acres, and there's only so many acres in the United States, and prices are high everywhere. So let's just say corn's 91 million for a minute, soybeans are 89 million, and wheat's like 46. It's hard to expand the acreage number, you know, for those three crops when those numbers are starting off. And then if you say, well, that 91 number is too high, Craig, right? It's got to go higher to 92, 93. That's fine. We can have that argument. But where are you taking that acres off? Are they coming off soybeans? You know, is it not 89? Is it 88 or 87? Is it not, you know, is wheat not 46 million acres? Because we are adding acres in wheat. Spring wheat's above $10. Winter wheat's been above $8. You know, you take a look at input costs and availability of inputs and where wheat is grown. Especially in areas where it might not be the most productive ground for corn and soybeans too, the wheat story makes sense. And when we saw the WASDE, the wheat acres went up instead of down. So, and spring wheat's probably the more attractive, most attractive one to plant out of all of them. And, you know, the winter wheat acres went up. So when I go through these numbers, just keep in mind, if you're saying to yourself, well, maybe the acres should be a little bit higher, just ask yourself, where are these acres coming from? Because, you know, I don't know. So when I take a look at corn versus soybeans, you have about 180 million acres a year. It used to be 178 million acres a year that were split between corn and soybeans. We get up to as high as 180, 181, but never that high unless or I can't remember anyways when it's been higher than that. I couldn't find anything to show it. So let's just call it 180 right now just because wheat's so high priced. Plus some of these specialty crops out here, they're so high priced, you know, they're not going to go to corn. So like you're not going to see people expand corn in Texas. Cotton is high enough. You know, up north, oats, you know, oats are high. You know, spring wheat is high. You're going to see a lot of these commodities go elsewhere. I mean, in Illinois and Iowa, we'll just see our normal 50-50 rotation, corn, beans, but other decisions are being made out there. So I still think we're at 91 million acres corn. 91 million acre corn with planted, not harvested, planted, and a yield of 180. And we use, I think, some pretty conservative supply and demand numbers. Demand numbers where it comes to feed, food, ethanol, and exports. We pretty much produce just as much as we use at 91 million and a 180 yield, which, by the way, would be a record by 3 bushels. And we're using as much as we have. And if we're really starting off at a 1.2 or 1.3, if I'm right about the 91 million acres and just close on some of this export stuff, which I don't think is that hard to figure out what the ethanol number is going to be and what the export numbers are going to be within about 100 million bushels either way, or 50 million bushels either way. We'll be starting off, and you know, when the May releases their new crop estimates, at 1.2 billion. Going into the summer weather months. So I just think, I don't see any reason why corn should break below 550 anytime soon. And quite honestly, if South America is as bad as some of us think it is, and we're starting off, you know, at 1.2 or 1.3 billion when new crop comes out, that means we can have some pretty volatile summer numbers too for corn, where even just a 2 bushel loss, if we go back to, or 3 bushels, so we go back to 177 again, and we lose 200 to 250 million bushels because of a 3 bushel loss off of yield from 180 to 177, mathematically, we're at a billion or lower, right? I mean, it's just, those are the numbers I'm seeing. I mean, I've run these numbers on my tables a couple of times, and that's what it's showing. And I know what a billion carryout means in terms of prices. It's high. It's the kind of, you know, it's wouldn't even mind buying out of the money calls here, going based on that premise. And I think that's something that we will do. We will be buying call spreads and selling puts or put spreads for the spring and summer months, whether you're spec or hedge. I think it's a very interesting idea. I know we've had a big run up, but when I look at this new crop table, I can justify it, especially with the inflation that we've seen. When I take a look at soybeans, you know, I'm looking at 89 million acres and a 51 yield. And at 89 million acres planted and a 51 yield, which I think would be around a trend line, maybe it's a little bit low by a half bushel, but it'll be close. We use as much as we produce, right? So even if we're 88 million acres and 51 and a half yield, I actually think we're at a deficit a little bit by about 20 or 30 million bushels year over year. But it, you know, and ending stocks right now are 350 for old crop. And that is not counting a good 5 to 6 million metric tons of lost production, and you know, in South America, let's say it's 6, you know, that's about 200 to 250, 205 to 6, that'll be 200, 250 million bushels, maybe 100, 125 come back. You know, ending stocks for the United States might be closer to 250, 225 starting off. And then with 89 million acres and a trend line yield, we're still going to be in probably the low 200s. That's assuming that we don't lose any more production in South America. So we're already starting off pretty tight. We're already starting off at a 5% stock to usage and days of supply on 20%. And soybeans has to fight with corn, because people are going to tell me that 89 million acres is too high for soybeans. But if it goes any lower, we could be starting off the year sub 200, you know, based on what happens in South America. So I think the market knows that, and it's got to price new crop beans 13 or higher in order to make sure we get those 89 million acres. And I think that's why I see the price ratio the way it is. So now we've got a situation where we've got high corn. We need at least 91 million acres in corn with a trend line yield year over year to stay at whatever the ending stocks are for this old crop. And I don't think it's 1.5. I think it's 1.2 or 1.3. Need 91 million acres at least and a trend line yield to stay there. The soybeans, we, you know, and I don't think we're at 350 million ending stocks. I think it would be sub 300, somewhere probably in the mid 200s. And just to stay there, we need 89 million acres and a 51 yield. To me, that spells some volatility this summer. Spring and summer. When I take a look, let me bring up the last one. Take a look up is wheat. All wheat, I have planted area for all wheat at 48 million. I think I think that's right around the other analyst estimates that I see too, and especially after what we saw with the winter wheat acres and the winter wheat seedings report. Trend line yield is probably going to come in at 49. Some people say that is too high, especially compared with how dry things are in the belt. But I'm really trying to figure out what we'll see in May, and not so much, where the USDA is going to start off yield and acres. And I do think they'll start off closer to around 48, 49. When you have that 48 million acres, meanwhile, 2 years ago, we were 44.5 million acres. This year for old crop, we're 46.7. So we keep on increasing acres. And again, I think that's reasonable to assume we're also saying 180 million acres combined corn and soybeans. And you might be saying to yourself, maybe something's got to give there. Maybe you can't have all these acres. So at worst, at best case scenario, right, in this high acreage scenarios that I'm coming up with, we're maxing out the acres. We're maxing out the acres. And when I do that with wheat, 48 million planted, probably about 39 million harvested, generous yield of 49. We are using as much as we consume, and ending stocks stay around 600 million, which is where they are now. So 89 million acres soybeans, 91 million acres corn, 48 million acres wheat. There'll be people out there that say that's too high. You can't have that many acres combined them all three. I think you can. I think you're really pushing it at that point. Just everything gets planted. And if trend line yields in that scenario, we use just as much as we produce. Ending stocks don't go up or down. And you got to ask yourself, what does that mean for prices? I mean, we're going to be tight all around coming into the year, planting everything we can, and need trend line at least just to stay the same and stay as tight as we are. That's how I'm reading it. I would like to see what some other analysts are saying too, but I haven't seen a ton of work on this yet. But it's that's where we are. And if that's the case, then if I'm a spec trader, I'm looking for ways to have some limited risk option plays into spring and summer and all these. If I am a producer, nothing wrong with some buyback strategies for old crop. And then on the new crop, I wouldn't be adverse to putting some lofty sell targets with the elevator in some of these markets. I could even, the courage calls make sense here, right? Because if things get hot and dry this summer and the markets really move, and I've been in those situations, it's so fast, you don't know when to sell. They're good prices, but it could keep on going higher. Sometimes it just makes sense to have that call way up top that you bought now when things, I want to say prices are cheap, but they could be a lot cheaper than they are in the spring and summer if I'm even close to being right on some of these supply and demand tables. So, and you get a weather market. So I'm going to say it should be for corn, soybeans, winter wheat, and spring wheat. They all have the potential to be bullish if we have weather issues. I'm going to be real interested to see what the spring and summer forecasts are. I know it's hard to predict anything outside of 10 days, and even then it's a challenge. But, you can get some idea on the long term, La Nina, El Nino. Are we going to be dry? Are we going to be wet? Hotter than normal? I mean, there are things that the Weather Service has put out that could give you kind of an idea. So that's where we are. It's very interesting. I will put these out in my newsletter. Last thing I just want to touch on real quick is the major exporters. I'll post these charts too, but one thing you got to always realize is it's one thing to be tight domestically, right? But it can only, if there's plenty of grain and oil seed outside the United States, then prices in the United States can only rally to as much where it makes sense to import from South America, Europe, like when it pencils. Like if they have plenty of wheat or plenty of corn or plenty of soybeans, at some point the rally dies in the United States because it pencils to bring it over from Europe or South America. And that's your top. The only time where you don't have a top and you never know where it's going to go is if the United States is tight and so is the rest of the world, And when I say rest of the world, I mean the major exporters. Because someone who buys grain and has grain in stock and is never willing to sell it, they're done. They don't count, right? It's the nations that actually participate in the exporting market that help determine the prices. So you take a look at major exporter carryout stock to use the same way we do with the United States. So corn, that would be Argentina, Brazil, South Africa, US, Ukraine, Russia, right? So it's basically Black Sea, South Africa, South America, US. Right now, stock to usage for those nations about 8%. Last year is about 7%. Back in 2001, 2012, when we had the drought, it was right around these levels too. So we're just as tight around the world and as we have been or around there. And so we're coming in globally with tight stocks. We're having weather issues in South America, and the US might not be able to get over 91 to 92 million acres and stay the same year over year. Gonna have a just great growing season, but you know, here and around the world, but we're not in South America, and you know, most likely the major corn exporters stocks are gonna get tighter. They have the potential to get as tight as they were back in 2011 and 2020, which would have been, you know, when we were, you know, 7%. We could even, you know, and it would argue for all-time highs. I mean, Chinese corn right now is at 11. If you know, right under $11. So not saying that's going to happen, but those kind of things can happen pretty fast if we have weather issues this spring. I'm going to switch on over to soybean major exporters. Soybean major exporters, again, that's just three: Argentina, Brazil, and United States. Stock to usage is about 18%. We haven't been this low since 2011, and that's the lowest we've been. I think it was right around 17%. We're at 18 now. Doesn't we lose more production in South America? Might be at could be at all-time global stock lows on exports. And then if we're also tight, what's even more interesting is that what would be even more interesting in soybeans is, you know, not only is the soybean so tight, but canola, forget about that. I mean, that's canola is tight as it's ever been and then some. And when I talk to Canadian farmers, it's nice working with StoneX now that we can do business in Canada. When I talk to Canadian farmers, you know, for them, their version of, you know, their big version of cash crops and, you know, like corn and soybeans here in the United States, for them, it's canola and spring wheat. And we may see less acres in canola this year. And, you know, just based on conditions, I don't think they're going to have a trend line yield. I think it might be a little bit lower. And if that's the case, the canola situation will be at minimum pipelines again, just like they were last year. So, or this year. So there is a lot going on in that. And then if you take a look at palm oil and you look at the EU rapeseed, all tight. It's just all tight. And not only that, you can make the argument that soybeans has the best demand growth driver with biofuel mandates right now. So that's tight. And then finally, let's take a look at the wheat major exporters. And again, I'll add this all into the newsletter. Wheat major wheat exporter carryout is at 13%. Haven't been this tight since 2007. I believe wheat got to $20 in 2007. So, you know, I don't think we're going there. I mean, that was an interesting situation way back when for those of us who lived through it, which, by the way, that is why expanded limits exist at the exchange now, because of what happened with wheat in 2007. Long story short, we had three crop failures in a row, culminating with Australia having their second year in a row. It was basically Australia had crop failure, Northern Hemisphere had a bad crop, and then when it came back down the next year, in fact, to the Southern Hemisphere, Australia had two bad crops in a row. It was just a mess. We were for about a week, wheat was limit up. So after that, the exchange increased limits, or expanded limits after limit up or limit down in order to facilitate trading. Anyways, that's where we are on major wheat exporter carryout. So it's Argentina, Australia, Canada, European Union, US, Ukraine, like Russia and Kazakhstan. That's the major export market. When you look at all their ending stocks, we're just as tight as we were back in 2007. So it's not even like corn and soybeans can steal acres from wheat. You can make the case that wheat might could steal acres from corn and soybeans. So there's just a lot going on. I like the idea of using some breaks and getting positioned nicely for the spring and summer. And if I'm a consumer, let's say an end user of any of these products, it makes sense. I know a lot of people on the consumer end kind of buy month to month because they're waiting for prices to come back down. They don't want to book too far in ahead. I get that. I'd be looking at calls, cheap calls, just in case things go much higher than you think they would. I do. What is a big risk though for the end user in these markets is not so much the high prices and what it does to margins for their products at the grocery store. Availability could now be a serious issue. So honestly, if I think about it, take another second run at that, maybe it makes sense to come in and buy and book as much cash as possible. And then for them, they buy puts just in case the market tanks. So they're not a competitive disadvantage in the marketplace, meaning like you go ahead and book all the soybean oil you need, or you book all the spring, the high protein wheat you need. And then, you know, in case we come down by 50%, you have some puts, and that way you're not, you know, your margins aren't terrible when everything gets produced and it goes to goes to Walmart in a couple of months from now. That would probably be the play, because now it's not high. It's not just high prices, it's scarcity. And then for the farmers out there, owning some old crop makes a lot of sense to me. I think having the new crop courage calls makes a lot of sense to me. On the next rally, if you want to try to build some floors, I think you get some pretty attractive prices on floors. But when we get a tight market, my rule of thumb has always been, if you get tight markets, you're better off having the re-ownership strategy in the futures and making the cash sales. I've just seen that work better. When you're a burdensome market, like 3 billion carryout in corn, you know, selling calls to collect premium and using the carry to your advantage are different strategies. Those aren't the kind of strategies you use in these kind of markets. These kind of markets, what you're doing is you're putting things in place in the futures market that either we own or sell into that make those cash sales that much easier to do. So that's the game plan. If you need some help, you want to talk about it, let me know. Everyone have a great week, and I will talk to you soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.